Welcome to the Performance Health Podcast. My name is Tim Caron. Today, Corey and I are going to talk about how we want to set up a weight room by either rack-based or assembly line-based. We're going to talk a lot about the logistics associated with, all right, are we trying to get everyone through in an efficient manner? Do we have some sort of evaluation of our coach's skill and their ability to navigate all functions of the weight room? That's going to be a big differentiator between whether you should go rack-based or assembly line-based. It's going to be a great episode. If you guys are enjoying what you're listening to, head over to phpodcast.com, go through all of our blogs, get on our memberships. We have a coaching membership where we get you access to 40 hours plus of high-level content between web shows, program reviews, and then lectures I've done over the years, as well as I have a collective membership. And this is a private group that we get really in the weeds on a lot of topics. We're actually breaking down blood panels, and we're reading the book Blood Never Lies. And this could have been, that would be an awesome experience to have you guys on board. All right, let's head over to the interview we did with Corey about what's looking at assembly line versus rack-based.
Season 6 continues. We're talking more weight room management today. There's two primary lanes that you're going to dive into. We have rack-based and assembly lines. So why don't you go ahead and define those and let it rip.
Yeah, you're thinking about how are people going to navigate around your weight room. And going all the way back to this simple notion of assembly line fashion. And it gets into this, not to get too technical, industrial revolution, but this idea of Taylor is everyone has a point in the, as a cog in the wheel as we move through. You can almost assume that's actually very proletariat, which is not the worst model in the world in certain circumstances. But from a system of pushing people through from one station to the next, and getting them through a workout in a very timely and efficient manner, and having this almost like this chain that's moving down a weight room line, going through your movement prep, your speed, your plyos, your power, your strength, your conditioning, your post-work out the door. We've abandoned that quite a bit. And because we're working in time blocks that are just different, right? We don't have these staggered starts. We don't have control of like people just coming in and matriculating through the workout. We've evolved into more rack-based or having a hub that we keep athletes working around. And I think for most young strength conditioning coaches, they're probably going to be a lot more familiar with the rack-based and saying, okay, I'm going to have 3 to 4 kids at a rack. They're going to train out of that. We're going to do our primary motor pattern. We're going to utilize accessory exercises somewhere either at the rack or within the vicinity of the rack. And they're going to work through that workout by circling from that rack outwards or within that rack entirety. And there's gonna be pros and cons for both. But what I wanna really start to go through here is at a certain point, having at least in your back pocket, another option to pump more kids through a workout in a given day, you should have that like opportunity to explore that. And it might be a reconfiguration of your room. It might be just, hey, putting certain people at certain stations that they can be successful with and other people at other stations that they can be successful with. And it might be, hey, we have to go staggered start because it's after practice and we have kids going to athletic trainers and meeting with coaches. And then certain kids don't have those and they can come right into the weight room. So we want to just pump them through this circuit and get them out the door in a timely manner as opposed to waiting for everyone and having them working off a singular rack. So there's a lot of back and forth on this. But the central theme of this is either we're moving station by station in and out of the workout from A to B. And the other one is we're working at a station and revolving around that, much like a sun and planets orbiting around it. And we're working through that. That's the center of our universe. So those are the kind of two classifications I want to break down in this episode.
So you used it a little bit there, but could you give us some examples of when you might use either one of those?
Yeah. So post-practice, I think, is the clearest example for assembly line. In the team sector, there's so much to be said about just not wasting or hemorrhaging time or not having kids start something and other kids start something at a different time when it's rack-based. Because one thing that's definitive about rack-based, it's got to have a definitive start and end for the entire group. Versus assembly line, it's not as locked in on that. Now, there's downsides to assembly line, especially if you're organizing in a way of one coach taking one station and then another coach taking another station. The monotony is pretty high. So essentially you're just coaching knee hugs for 8 hours. Like that's pretty painful. But the other end of it, they're going to be damn good at coaching those knee hugs by the end of the day. So there's that, right? And just that repetition makes a big difference. But in a circumstance or a situation where you want to think about assembly line, post-practice in the team sector or the public sector is the clearest representation of when we should be thinking about it. versus an off-season or in-season schedule lift, you want to probably get into a rack. Now, with that being said, we have other things we could talk about in the private sector, right? We have group-based strength training. I do a rack. I don't have a staggered start. I do rack-based there. But in another world, let's say that you have summer camps and you got to churn thousands of kids through a workout in a very timely manner, and you have dozens of coaches, the assembly line and having everyone have a role and getting these kids through a workout in a timely manner might be another option. So you think about assembly line, like your optionality, because you can expand number of group times you can do, right? So let's say that you can do a group of 18 every hour for 6 hours in a day. If I have a group starting every 15 minutes off these 15-minute time blocks for movement prep, speed, power, strength, and then going into conditioning, like I can probably churn a lot more people through a given time. So in a public sector, you're probably thinking about unique situations like a post-practice or just maybe a discretionary period where it's open-ended and it can come through. That'd be a good opportunity to do assembly. And in a private sector with a very high volume of kids in a very short period of time, another good thing to think about in terms of this assembly line. In the more rack-based, it's defending the start and end and having a clear, hey, this is the hour time block we're doing. We can send them off of that workout by staying at the rack and working off that set. And there's going to be like shortcomings from that. Like you'll find that your accessory work for rack base is limited. Cool. You'll find that if you're going a single coach, coaching a single station, that they get bored. If a coach has to coach all stations, there's going to be definitively weak spots for them coaching the entire station or just maintaining that group throughout the entirety of the workout. And then you get into this whole thing from a pedagogy standpoint. There's some tremendous research for looking at a kid staying in a single classroom all day with one teacher versus doing periods with multiple teachers, right? And then the teachers get tired of working with the kids, get tired of listening to the teacher, rotate it up. But then, hey, I learned that teacher's style. I learned the kid's learning style. And we can, when we go to a subject that's harder or more easy, we can get into this concept of I can toggle pretty quickly based off of their intelligence or their focus or their just energy and enthusiasm to do something. And that ties into workouts, right? For doing a very big upper body day with a football team, probably doesn't take a lot of technical coaching. Probably just takes a lot of effort and enthusiasm. For doing speed and plyos and Olympic lifts, like it's going to take a lot more technicality. And if you have that tied into your workout at a rack, you might have certain racks that are really good. You might have certain racks that are really bad. If you just do a station base, you might have certain coaches that are very good and very not as good. And you get into this like, all right, there's some weak spots for both. The thing that I would like you to think about is one, don't abandon one as less than or create a notion that one's less than. And the other idea is be more cognizant of the inherent weak spots that you have with the way you structure your workouts by staying at a rack for the entire time or just being dogmatic with, we got to be assembly line. We just pump them through the circuit. They're just moving through and we get them out and we move on to the next. Because there's downsides to both and there's pluses to both.
How can you set your staff up for success? You mentioned like they could be facing monotony, that could get boring. So how do you set them up for success? Like, hey, I know this is going to get boring. Do you get out in front of it? How do you approach that?
If you're young, I think you need to be very good with very simple things. Like this idea of you're a novice as a coach, and you need to be extremely good at very simple and easy things to do. And your ability to take on, whether you think it's beneath you or you think that you are far beyond the bandwidth cognitively what you're asked to do, doesn't really matter. You need to demonstrate that you are capable with simple things before you can do more complicated or complex things. And when we get into the they're going to get bored. I do not care about someone who's in their first 3 years of coaching getting bored. Like you are, there's the human psyche and motivation incentive is far more complex and chaotic than any coach can ever realize. And if you're the first person they see and you're just prepared and you're just boom, lighting it up and doing a great job because you're just so confident with what you're doing, that's going to have a profound impact on your overall ability. And when you start to level them up and they're a little bit out of their depth and now they don't have the benefit of just high monotony, they get to expose for a little bit. So from a staff's perspective, if you're young and you're introductory, never be too big to do the small things. And if you have the warm-up station where you're just doing knee hugs, ankle grabs, toe touches, and shin grabs for 10 minutes, and then a next group walks in, you better just coach that second group up like you coach the first group up, and coach the third group up like you coach the second group up, all the way through till you have 200 kids rolling through doing your warm-up station. And what I'm looking at you as, I'm not judging you on the first, I'm not judging you on the second, I'm judging you on the last. And what does that look like? Are you disinterested? Are you bored? Like, I'm not giving you more. You've demonstrated a low capacity to do the job at a high level over time. Like, that's your true nature. Like, your potential becomes like kind of an afterthought because your real actual focus and ability is dwindled over time. And that, like, you go all the way to Euro Dreams of Sushi and watching that, there's guys literally just focusing on making rice for 8 hours a day, every day for decades. Like, you're not too big to coach this really complex thing that we're working with athletes and clients, and just being really good with those things before you start to ask for more. And then the more veteran coaches, there's an argument to be made about if they've come complacent, they probably want simple and not thinking, like, I can hold on to my Stanley mug of water or coffee and I can just coach knee hugs for 8 hours a day, go home, and I'm not thinking anything other than that, right? I can do that in my sleep. I can get a fold-out chair and tell the guys, grab your knees, walk it out for 10 yards, come on back, ankle grabs. Like, that's a problem in itself. And then you have the coaches that are super ambitious, that have been around for a while, have a high capacity. They want it to be as technical and challenging as possible. So putting them at a station become problematic. As we work through, hey, I'm going to be a station-based coach. Like, hey, a post-practice, it's just a shit show. We're going to get guys rolling through one station to the next. I want to either have one coach take a group through the entirety of it, knowing that they're going to have inherent weaknesses at certain stations, or I'm going to put our novice coaches at the easiest to manage station. I'm going to put our more veteran coaches at the hardest to manage. All that being considered, is you just got to look at it through as, if the weakness is so bad, you have to protect and shield them, versus if the strength is so good, you got to keep them engaged and push them. And where you really land is, where are we going to be collectively more successful? And I'm going to try to limit the negative from someone who's young, green, inexperienced, lacks discipline, or I'm going to try to enhance the positive on someone that's more veteran, more capable, more knowledgeable, more skilled, and try to push them in that direction. Now, in terms of rack-based, we do this in another way. We just put the ones with the least impact on the outcome of a game with our more novice coaches, because their inability to coach a session is not as detrimental as our 22 starters and our top players. We do that. We do the same thing, right? We're trying to almost quarantine the person that's going to cause some sort of downstream issues from just being inexperienced, unknowledgeable, lazy, complacent, et cetera. And then the other end, we're trying to put our best players with our coaches that are going to have the biggest impact. And we do this subconsciously. There's a hierarchy, there's a tenure, there's a chain of command that has all the symbolic gestures associated with it. Like, I coach rack one for the last decade of my college strength conditioning career, right? That was my flag in the sand. I worked my ass off. I was the top coach and I took pride in that. And you better come at me with a knife and a serrated blade if you wanted to take rack one from me. That was the mentality I had. And I had to rise to the occasion every single day and bring it, because there's a lot of people always gunning for your spot. And that's great. I love that. And they'll love that competitiveness. But in the notion of, hey, how would I talk to a staff on this? So it's either this is where you stand. You're the low guy on the totem pole. You got to work hard. You got to prove yourself. You got to take feedback. You got to take criticism. You got to improve every single day and demonstrate a capacity to take on more responsibility. If you're the more veteran guy, I want you to be excited. I want you to give great effort. I want you to use all your skill, all your knowledge, all your might to helping this program win more games in the fall. All that being considered is going to be the same type of logic and approach when I do assembly line versus rack-based.
Now, what about logistics? I know you're big on amateurs think about tactics, professionals talk about logistics. What are the logistical considerations that we need to have in mind when we're thinking about going either assembly line or rack-based?
Time, right? You look at the density, what you're trying to get a workout, right? So let's talk about, all right, the movement prep is a means to an end to get people to do things that have more ROI or return on investment. So we traditionally look at movement prep as an inconvenience to getting things that are actually going to transform biomotor abilities of force, velocity, and work. So if we look at that movement prep as insignificant, inconsequential, you got to figure out how to shorten it up so you can get more time spending on the biomotor ability. I tend to disagree with that. I think there's a psychological aspect. I think there is a motor learning aspect of that. I think there's just a calibration effect, all that being considered. But you look at it from the logistics associated with both assembly line and rack based, is how can you squeeze more from a session and how do you get more residual from the time that you have? And when we look at it from, hey, if I'm sacrificing quality from not having just good logistics, then I have to figure out how to improve the logistics, which is a bottleneck and it's limiting throughput, as Elijah Goldratt would say. And we have to improve or enhance our ability to be more economical with our time. And when I think about these bottlenecks or these just transitions, maybe we have a movement prep and assembly line, and then we have to walk all the way through other people going through their strength training to get to speed and power. That's a logistics problem. Right, you need to reorient your room to accommodate that. Or in that case, if you can't reorient your room, let's say there's a big column and you have to put the rack around it, you might need to transition to rack-based and vice versa, right? Let's say that you only have four racks and you have hundreds of athletes you got to get through and you want to work them all at the rack. You're going to have to go assembly line for good or bad. These are real things that happen all the time. And we tend to downplay the significance on the amount we can get of quality work and workout. And we might put eight to a rack and go, okay, it is what it is. We're rack-based. I don't think that's a good idea. I think you are hemorrhaging your time and not getting the value, because time is the one commodity in team sector that we simply just can never take for granted. And if we start to look at it from, I'm spending time by having just a lot of fluff in there, right? Like I want to use a compound multi-joint movement, like a squat or deadlift, as my primary movement to develop softball players. And I have eight softball players working at one rack. I have eight working another rack, eight working another rack. And I'm like, there's a lot of downtime here. So what I'm going to do is an A1, A2, A3, A4, A5, A6, and hope they're all good. You're probably at that point better served to go, okay, we're going to go stagger this. And we're going to have one group start in movement prep, and then we're going to move power. Next group start up. So I can get the most from those four racks. So I have a good work to rest ratio. And I'm not trying to fill it with a bunch of fluff or unnecessary things. Because I guarantee you, unless it's a targeted circuit working muscular endurance, like a German body comp, if you're required to do a tri-set for every single thing because you have so many kids at a rack, the quality of that third exercise is nothing. It is a waste of time. You're keeping them busy. You're occupying their headspace and their attention, but it's not doing anything. And that in itself is enough reason to start to reevaluate. Maybe I need to be more assembly line based. And then the other end of it, it's assembly line has issues too. Right? We're not finishing on time. It creates a logjam. That group behind has to start a little bit later. And then that group behind them starts a little bit later. And then it starts to compound. And the final group is starting 30 minutes late. And that is an issue. That is an issue when they got to be at practice, or they got to get home, or they got to go to study hall. All these things matter in the bottom line. And all just a simple thing of, man, that first group was just talking about bullshit and they weren't moving it fast enough. Or maybe they just do a really shitty job at one station and the kids just lose track and lose focus and the second station suffers for them. And all of these things matter in terms of the grand scheme of things and how you want to have a very optimal and efficient thing. And you look at the classic models from an industrial revolution to maybe even like a team of teams and this like horizontal leadership. You have your pods, you're working through it. So if you're thinking like, and they talk a lot about that in team of teams, is like this horizontal. Everyone is the same. I got my rack. You got your rack. Let's do a great job. Let's communicate. Let's collaborate. We got a pod. We got a cluster. We're working this group. We're working in a cohesive manner. Same thing in assembly line, which might be considered more Taylorism or looking at this, we're working down a factory line. They all have a symbiotic relationship. The ecosystem is the most imperative, important thing to manage as you're going through these workouts. And if the ecosystem is being compromised in any way, or the communication or the collaboration of a cohesiveness is being suffered for some reason that we don't know, you got to fix it. As a leader, as a head coach, you're just thinking about logistics all the time. You're thinking about, what is the most optimal program I can do? What is the most high level thought out program I can do that my staff could be successful with, that the facility can be successful with? And if I organize my room in such a way that cleans up a lot of these things just organically, that I don't have to worry about it, my staff doesn't have to worry about it, we can be in a much better position to be successful over time.
So what about from the perspective of the athlete? Have you found that like athletes prefer one method over the other? Because I'm just thinking of my own experience. Like I personally hated assembly line based. Like I I want to be at the rack. That's just my personal take. Have you found that, or is it just all over the place?
Depends on what you be good at what you emphasize. That's always the case. I prefer this, or let's say that, I mean, I would be remiss to say that Olympic lifts were an essential part of what you did, and you felt you probably rushed, especially if you're trying to work up to a really heavy weight. You right. probably felt like you were pressured to just go fast and get it done with in an assembly line. And I don't think any athlete, like there's not all athletes are the same in that regard. I think they just want to just get it over. And I want to see a threshold. I want to see good execution. I want to see good focus. And from a person that just, I'm doing this because I know it's, I have to, or I understand that it's a part of being an athlete, an assembly line might work really well. Like you look at sports outside of football. I would, if I'm a betting man, maybe volleyball, but most like basketball, soccer, baseball, like, I don't think they're going to freak out about having to go one station to the next. I think they would actually prefer in a lot of ways because it's a new environment. You're moving on to the next thing. It's focus, move on, focus, move on, focus, move on versus rack. It's just like more like cyclical thing. It's like a clock where you're coming back to zero every single time. And you're starting it up again, like you're just starting the rotation again, coming back to ground zero and then moving on to the next sequence of things. So from a psyche standpoint, like there's always going to be a case to be made about athletes who are low frequency, who strength training or strength conditioning is valuable, but just not in the way it is valuable for like a body mass specific sport like football, like track and field. Like they would definitely love a rack. They would love their own rack. They wouldn't want to work with anyone else. And you're like, they can't do that. Like they are anaerobes, most of them by nature, and they like to just get it done versus even that example, cross country runners. I'm sure they would love a post run circuit, get out and go home. I would be shocked if a distance athlete was not fired up over, all right, here's your movement prep. Here's your power. Here's your strength. Here's your little bit of post work. See ya. I bet they would be stoked on that. And a football player or like a shot putter would be so pissed and annoyed. Like I'm not getting the value I deserve here because I'm compromising the time it takes for me to go to heavy weights or really push myself on certain things I think I have a bigger ROI because the next group's coming in and just getting forced out. Like I'm sure there's always going to be a perception associated with that. And there's always the other thing too of you and me are probably one and the same in that we're probably better at strength conditioning than we were anything else. And that was our time to shine. And when we feel like that was just another station in these endless list of stations, it feels like it was taking away things that I find validation and purpose from. And there's a little sense of, this is how I feel like I'm contributing to the team, and you're rushing that process. You're just checking a box, which I hope it doesn't turn into that for anyone doing assembly line. You coach each station with the utmost effort, but there's a time component to it that I think is a little bit more pertinent.
Yeah, I was just curious because, you know, I'm always thinking of, like, can I do this better? But also it's just me. Could I run a set? I was just kind of almost working through it on that lens of things. So like, I guess that might be a good question. Like, if someone was by themselves, but assembly line was best, how do you think they might go about that?
I would just look at it from this context of where can you be successful with? I don't necessarily think if you're by yourself, you should be doing assembly line. Like you're going to probably have to do station base regardless. Like, you're going to have to get them in a rack. Like it's just not feasible. Unless you can start to develop internship programs and getting people working with you and giving them reps as a whole, like the one and then 300 athletes, like it's getting them to a station and it might not even be racks at that point. Cause typically anything with that poor of an athlete to coach ratio is probably limited equipment to begin with. So you might be grabbing a kettlebell, grabbing a 4x4 area and just swinging for an hour. Right. And you're just like set one. You see this all the time with the position 1, 2, 3 hang clean, right? That get your quadrant and you're just staying in that area with the bar and bumpers. And we're going to go position one. And you're just, they look like a mini battalion going through marching and like in a cadence. And I know that is a wildly successful form of training. And I think it's important to note, whatever you can be more successful with based off of the limitations you have from your staff, your equipment, all the things, like you're just making a judgment call of like, where could I be best with? Can I simultaneously manage 30 different kids doing the same exercise at once? Or am I better served with those 30 kids doing 4 exercises at a given time? Or am I better served that those kids making their way through an assembly line and I'm just managing and operating?
Sweet, Tim. This was great. I appreciate taking the time.
Hell
I
yeah.
Gotta get out of here. Yeah.
Me too. Likewise, man. All right, brother.
I'll see you, brother.